Support for WERU comes from Maine Boats, Homes, and Harbors magazine, covering Maine's boats, harbors, arts, and architecture since 1987. Bringing the coast as close as the mailbox, on the web at maineboats.com.
The time is 10 o'clock, and you're tuned to WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org. Stay tuned for Boat Talk with Mike Joyce and Alan Sprague.
If I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. I'd go out on the ocean, and if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean. I set me up for my pony on my boat. Now if I were Roy Rogers, I'd show.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Boat Talk. This is WERU's own radio call-in show for people contemplating things naval. This is a show with hosts Mike Joyce and Alan Sprague, two old salts, who are espousing their navels and opening up a sea chest of nautical nonsense. It's a call-in show again. Here's a number for you to remember if you'd like to join in this nautical expousations, 1-800-625-9378. We have a whole random list of boating things to talk about. And
I'm still puzzling over the difference between espousing and exposing my navel.
Exposing.
My navel definitely doesn't need to be exposed.
Supposedly
in the modern fashion, you know.
Verbal.
All right, then. We do have a bunch of stuff here this morning, but we're always interested in your call, contemplating anything you're contemplating, naval. We'll drop about whatever we're doing to talk to somebody, see who's on the phone. It's like wandering into the boat shop, and we'll talk to about anybody because we'd rather do that than work most of the time.
This is a time when people are starting to think about their boats, you know, getting ready in these warm days, and maybe I'll go out there and start working on the old boat, getting it ready.
And mud season, maybe if you've got a boat out in the yard, you ought to go and check to see that the stands haven't sunk down in the mud and the boat's still standing up. But anyway, we'll get to all that. We would like to dedicate this morning's edition of Boat Talk to Newman G. of St. Albans, Maine. And we're sorry to say that Newman passed away the other day in a woodlot accident. Newman G., kind of a famous character in his own way. He's only 50 years old, and Newman, I've never met him, but I believe he had a big old handlebar mustache. He was a bit of a character. He was prone to wear, like, chaps and cowboy hats. And, again, he was, as one lady says, she was first taken aback when she first met Newman, but she quickly warmed up to him. Newman was a healer, and he spent the last months of his life struggling how to heal St. Albans politics. He was good, honest, caring, genuine person. Newman was a knee logger.
A knee logger.
A knee logger. Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Newman was probably the only knee logger in the United States of America, and by knees we mean the little curved braces that hold the deck up to the side of the hull sort of thing, shelves to knees.
Wooden L brackets.
Exactly. And he specialized in hackmatack knees, which is the eastern larch, also known as,
Tamarack.
Tamarack, yeah. And these grow in swampy areas, and the roots, sometimes curl up above the ground. And he specialized in digging down into the ground and chopping these perfectly right-angle grown roots out and preparing them just right, and he sold those to the Amistad Recreation down in Mystic, Connecticut, among others, and lots of little boats all over the place. The only knee logger in the United States of America, bit of a character, good fella, and as I said, died in a woodlot accident the other day. He was found by a family member and flown to the hospital and did not survive. Newman G.
Yeah. I never knew his last name, but I had heard of the character. Go to see Newman was the thing.
Lately, he was also gaining notoriety for his artistic wooden furniture. He was a former St. Albans selectman, a former firefighter, past member of the planning board, current chairman of the town's budget committee. He was also a member of the Sepasticook Valley Arts Alliance, and he leaves a wife of 25 years and two boys. Newman G., rest in peace. Mm. Yeah. I'm very sorry to hear that.
It's sort of really a milestone passing of our last.
Where will the next knee logger come from? You kind of wonder that, you know, the boys, it's hard to say. But anyway, Newman G. passed away, and we dedicate this episode of Boat Talk to Newman. And the number here, we haven't even said that yet, have we?
Yeah, I said it once, but let's say it
all
again.
Right. Just, and the phone just rang, too. What a coincidence.
1-866-625-9378.
Yeah, and we got a bunch of stuff to talk about this morning. I'd like to talk about Bateau this morning, specifically Benedict Arnold's Bateau. We'll get to that. We're expecting a call in the second half hour of the show from down to Maine Maritime Academy. And I'd like to explore what is the nature, you know, the big port controversy that's going on right now with security and the Dubai people. What is the actual nature of the American Merchant Marine? You know, we got this wonderful Merchant Marine That's Academy right. in Castine down the road here. You know, we don't own really any large foreign going ocean vessels nowadays in the United States. So we'll get a call hopefully in the second half hour of the show. We'll talk about the American Merchant Marine.
Yep.
Yeah.
We have a phone call, though, as you mentioned. The phone was
Yo,
ringing.
What a good thing.
Good morning. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you fine, Michael.
Good morning, this is Mark from Ellsworth. Good morning to you gentlemen, and I use that term loosely. I, too, knew Brennan G. I used to teach at Nokomis High School, and I taught his son, Brennan G. Jr. And I think that the business for the knee crook, I know young Brennan, it will continue. He idolized his father.
Oh,
and,
that's cool.
And was very, very that's interested great. In the business.
That's
a
very
great
cool.
Kid, just like his dad. And yeah. I think it will be maintained.
You're good. Yeah. Following in his roots, as it were.
Oh, good one. That was a good one. Well, that's good to hear because, again, very esoteric, little piece of a very small need, but, you know, a niche that he grew into and filled quite nicely.
So thank you, gentlemen. Keep your jib up and your stern down.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. So anyway, Newman G. and... Oh, we got all kinds of other stuff here. Let's talk about the web for just a second, the World Wide Web.
Oh, yes, we can.
WERU has a website, weru.org, and if you go on there, you can find some Boat Talk stuff. I talked to Matt Baia, the WERU computer guru, the other day, and he showed me this little thing where 350-something people in the last month have downloaded Boat Talk from, now that's, I believe, from the WERU website, and also... Boat Talk has been posted onto iTunes.
Yeah, I went to the website last night and looked at it. I couldn't figure out how to get to the iTunes from there.
Well, and I don't know. I was just going to ask you. You know anything about iTunes, Alan? I don't. I don't have an iPod. I don't even have a computer at the present time.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. And apparently if you search WERU, Maine, or Boats, you get Boat Talk on iPod. And why not? So... And we resolved to put up some more of that stuff. We'll be finding some old classic Boat Talks, and we'll get Matt to put those up on the computer.
We'll call it the iPod Peapod.
Good one, man. We also get emails from time to time, and I don't have a computer, so and I've lost my access to my favorite one, so I'm not all that computer tied in myself. Mm-hmm. So emailing us is kind of a funny game.
Well, you can email... Me, because I still have one.
Yeah.
I have a Boat Talk email address. That's simply boattalk@adelphia.net. That's Boat Talk, one word, two T's. If you ever want to email pictures or any suggestions for future shows, that's a good way to go.
Yeah, and we don't mean never to answer anybody's any form of communication is a good thing around Boat Talk. So we solicit that, but we try to tell you, you know, just exactly what we're doing here.
While we're talking about Boat Talk, though, the internet, we're making a collection for a Boat Talk calendar for next year. If you have any good photographs you think would be good for that, you can submit them to boattalk@adelphia.net.
I am very unhappy with my Boat Talk calendar. I have a Boat Talk calendar. I love it. But February had a picture of my snowboat. that sails on three pairs of skis across the snowy field. And when it come the 1st of March, February is such a short month, I didn't get to look at it long enough. And I had a hard time pulling up the page for March. And, you know, I want to look at the snowboats more.
Yeah, we didn't have much of a snowboat
that
season.
That time has
we?
Passed. It wasn't the time. Matter of fact, I called down to Quebec last month for Boat Talk. I thought that perhaps we would interview Gerard Mercier of Lévis, Quebec, who is the designer of Comatec, or snow boat. And so I got his number with some difficulty, and I got him on the phone, and Gerard does not speak English. And I have some French, but I was paralyzed for some reason, and I couldn't for the life of me even think of the word for bateau, for boat. I wanted to say thank you for your boat, and I couldn't for the life of me think of it. So I talked really loud to him. And then his, but he didn't understand that. And then his daughter came on the phone, and she didn't have much English either. So it was an interesting thing. And again, we won't be interviewing the snowboat guy on the radio, obviously, but that is a it's a cool little craft. So
we'll have to put that picture in next year's calendar then too.
And the whole bateau thing got me going too, because bateau, of course, is the French word for boat, but it also denotes a kind of a boat, sort of a traditional Maine river craft. Very narrow bottom, very flaring sides, pointy on both ends, good for driving through logs and a log drive and getting
keeping
out to
the, keeping the water on the outside for the most part.
Yeah, on the most part. And so anyway, I thought we might start Boat Talk this morning and talk about bateau for a couple minutes, specifically Benedict Arnold's bateaus. Benedict Arnold attacked Quebec in 1775, having marched up the Kennebec River through what is described best as a howling wilderness. And there's a brand new book out called Through a Howling Wilderness, Thomas Desjardins. And it is a wonderful little book of the blow-by-blow. It tells you the people and exactly what they did, who they were, some of their background, and a pretty much you know, blow-by-blow account of their trip from Cambridge up the river to Gardner, where they got their bateau, and up to Quebec. And it's,
so it's highly researched.
Huh? It's highly researched, and it's all original source material, and it's a hell of a story. It really and truly is. Now, Reuben Colburn, who was a Maine patriot from Gardnerstown, Maine, found himself down in Cambridge, Massachusetts while the Siege of Boston was going on. And he ended up having a little meeting with George Washington. And there was a proposal to, you know, do something with Quebec. And Reuben Colburn, being from the District of Maine, was familiar with the Kennebec, and he got to talking to George Washington about that. And George Washington gave him money to saw up planks for bateaus for the Continental Army. And then he said, George Washington sent him to meet Benedict Arnold, whose idea this was to go up through Maine and attack Quebec. Now, Arnold asked him for 200 bateaux capable of carrying 6 to 7 men each with their possessions and with their provisions and baggage, say 100 weight in each bateau. The boats be provided with 4 oars, 2 paddles, and 2 setting poles. And George Washington then gave Reuben Colburn go-ahead to take 2 dozen men and to assist in such service as you and they may be called upon to execute, and they will be paid 40 shillings lawful money for each bateau. Okay?
Lawful money.
Lawful money, 40 shillings. I'm not sure what that comes out to nowadays. Mm-hmm. But mind you, they just cut the trees down the other day. And they get 2 dozen men up to Gardner, Maine, on the Kennebec River, which was described at the time. When you come up to Gardnerstown, you see a Liberty Pole, 2 sawmills, and a number of very good dwelling places on the right side of the river. And in 2 weeks, they built 200 bateaux with green wood.
Wow.
Now, Benedict Arnold was he was a detail-rich kind of fella, and he'd thought of everything. One question he asked Colburn up front was, do you have enough nails? And the problem was they didn't have enough nails. So you know how they solved that problem, Alan?
They went to a nail order catalog.
That's a good one, too. But no, you had to make nails one at a time back then.
Yeah, really.
And they just they couldn't come up with the nails, so they pretty much left them out.
Okay.
They built the bateaus without
works for us.
With less than half as many nails as they would have if they had them. And so after 2 weeks, Arnold comes up to Gardner on the river, and on the bank there he sees 200 bateaux, quote, smaller than directions given and very badly built.
Yeah.
You know, and so then they set about to build 20 more. They built 20 more in a couple extra days, and they set up the river. And Reuben Colburn's boat builders set up the river with the expedition. There's about 1,200 men who are going up in three divisions to their ideas to attack Quebec. They have to haul all their food and their gunpowder and their guns.
So these guys who built the bateaux with the too few nails went in the boats anyway, huh?
No, they marched up the river. They marched up the river with the expedition, and at every falls in Kerry, they set up a boat shop and repaired the bateau as they were going, which got to be described in a short order as poorly floating, barely floating rafts is what they degenerated to.
Shrunk? Oh, man.
Yeah, and these guys, they set off from Fort Halifax now, which is Augusta, Maine now, not once from Fort Halifax to the Great Carrying Place where they left the river a few miles below the Forks, was present-day Forks, Maine. Not once in that entire trip distance did they have a chance to row those boats. They pushed and pulled them and waded them up the river.
Oh, boy.
Okay, and nice, it was not a good time. Water. They leaked pretty bad. And they are, full of beefs, casks of beef and flour and biscuit and gunpowder and peas. And these casks are not waterproof in these not waterproof bateaux. So yeah. The beef, which was killed in the summer and not put upright and was not only very unwholesome but very unpalatable, quickly went totally.
Downstream.
Yeah, totally by the way. And these people now, they're not only faced with the terrible ordeal of carrying these bateaux, they don't have any food either.
They got to go off hunting.
They're eating trout. They killed a moose. They had a couple of ox with them. They left the river at the Great Carrying Place. And that, again, is below the Forks, Maine. And you take off across country up over a height of land, up over the carrying ponds, West Carry Pond, Middle Carry Pond, Lower Carry Pond. And I've been up there. I got a buddy that's got a camp there. The idea of these boys wandering around the woods there in those hills with these green bateaux is just, it's unbelievable. They set up a hospital on one of the Carry Ponds there. And, again, not having a good time. They had some ox that they brought with them. They killed those at the end of the carrying place. That's when they started to be desperate for food. And these bateaux were, kind of a trial to the guys who had to carry them. I would heartily wish the infamous constructors, one unhappy soldier wrote, who, to satisfy their avaricious temper and fill their purses with the spoils of their country, may be obliged to trust to the mercy of others more treacherous than themselves, that they might judge the fear and undergo the just reward of their villainy. Another soldier said, could we have then come within reach of the villains who constructed these crazy things, they would have fully experienced the effects of our vengeance. You know, these boats were not popular with the boys. And again, they got to the Dead River up over the height of land, up over the carrying place with most of their bateau. The Dead River, which is now Flagstaff Lake, kind of slow, and then that leads up to the chain of ponds and the height of land at the top, which is now the Quebec border at Cockburn Gore. By the time they got to the height of the land, the boys were tired of carrying those bateaux, and they just basically left them in the woods, except for one bateau per each company to carry the heavy stuff. Except for the riflemen from Virginia, Daniel Morgan's riflemen, they carried every one of their bateaux over the height of land and across down into the Chaudière River and Lake Megantic, and they had the best trip because after they got over the height of land and what was considered the downhill portion of the journey, mind you, now we're free of these bateaux, they had their worst time ever. They not only went with these boats up the rivers, but they marched alongside, too, and they went through every bog and swamp that they possibly could and basically walked right through swamps, waded them up to their chests in snowstorms and ice nights and a flood where they camped on little hillocks and stuff. And, these boys, like I say, were not doing well.
Yeah.
They got lost up above the height of land there, and one party went totally out of their way. They were like a couple hours from a warm, dry place with provisions, and they spent literally days going around two lakes and swamps after that.
Yeah.
And but the boys that carried the bateau the whole way had the best trip.
Well,
so
keep on boating.
Yeah.
We do have a phone call.
Somebody on the phone.
Let's get to them right now. Good morning. Welcome to Boat Talk. Good morning. Nope. I guess he got tired of hearing Mike talk about boats.
Well, you know, and again, I...
Let's get the number again, just in case they got cut off. The number is 1-866-625-9378.
Apologize for going on and on, but it is a hell of a good story. But now, it took them 51 days to get from Augusta, Maine to Quebec, and they about starved doing it. They ate their dogs, they ate their moccasins, and they ate their pants, the pants that they had left. They, again, were not in good shape when they got there.
No, they're freezing their butts probably, weren't they?
Yep. They attacked Quebec, and that failed. They retreated down to Montreal and then down what became the retreat down Lake Champlain. And the British followed them down Lake Champlain. Now, let's talk about the little chances of history. Benedict Arnold failed to capture Quebec. That might have been a good thing. But it's thought that perhaps that was crucial to the success of the revolution that we failed in Quebec. Let's imagine that we had succeeded in Quebec. George Washington, who had his hands full in Boston and New York, would have had to send people up there to defend the country we'd just captured.
Mm-hmm.
He would have had to pay a lot of attention to Canada all of a sudden. Okay, the British, on the other hand, they would have had us being distracted instead of, at this point, they're worried about Canada, not us. They were, you know, so it was a burden on them. So after the Battle of Quebec there and the retreat down the Lake Champlain, Benedict Arnold caused a navy to be built on the spot out of raw trees in Skeensboro, Vermont, on the side of Lake Champlain. And the British coming down the lake behind them had carried some knocked-down schooners overland from the big river there. What is that? St. Lawrence. And they'd put them back together at the top of the lake, and they were at their leisure going to come down Lake Champlain and sweep the Americans before them. They can carry everything they want in their boats, and they have all the artillery they need.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Benedict Arnold got up this crazy plan, and he had shipwrights come from Maine and New England and everywhere, and they built this instant fleet of 24 vessels in the woods on the side of Lake Champlain. They hid behind Valcour Island, and when the British sailed by with the wind behind them, the Americans came out and says, "Hey, here we are right behind you." And the British had to turn around and come fight them, and they did, and they beat the Americans, but the Americans held them up. And the British commander sent a letter to the king and says, "Well, we beat them, but I'm not sure I can get anything else done this year. It's winter already," and that was it right there. And by the next season, the Americans were just flocking to the army that was trying to prevent General Burgoyne from coming down the Hudson Valley
mm-hmm.
and meeting up with the Howe brothers, okay? And at the Battle of Saratoga, there were two battles of Saratoga, 19 days apart. At the second one, Benedict Arnold was the fellow who won the battle. And he did that against all our... General Gates had relieved him of command the day before. He was a little jealous of him, and... Benedict Arnold was forbidden to be on the battlefield, and he just went out there and went nuts. And Arnold was that day seen, and said nothing could exceed the bravery of Arnold on this day at Bemis Heights. He seemed the very genius of war. He seemed inspired with the fury of a demon. He ended up with a broken leg with a musket ball in it, and basically won that battle. So what I'm saying here is, without Quebec, without Valcour Island, without the Battle of Saratoga, there might not be any America, and that was all Benedict Arnold and his bateau.
Hmm.
So there.
There you go.
Yeah.
If it weren't for boats.
I hope that was an interesting story. But anyway, great new book out. It is called Through a Howling Wilderness, and of course I grew up on that legend of Kenneth Roberts, the famous Maine novelist, wrote a great book called Rabble in Arms, which describes the story of the march to Quebec through our hero, who is from Arundel, Maine. Or maybe Rabble in Arms is the book after that. Arundel, I believe, would be the book that describes Arnold's trip up the Kennebec River to attack Quebec.
1-866-625-9378 if you'd like to join in the boat talk.
Great time for some phone calls.
Mike and I, as we say, expose navally, but if you want to hear some really good naval stuff, there's a couple of interesting events happening tomorrow evening, one in Rockland, one on Mount Desert Island, Southwest Harbor. The first one in Southwest Harbor starts at 6 o'clock on tomorrow the 15th, and it's going to be a picture and a oral history of the schooner Bowdoin, which is, I'm going to be going way out on a limb here, but I'm going to guess it was probably about 1920s that the Bowdoin was built. It was,
I think you're right,
an old, very heavily built sailing boat made to go Arctic exploration. So it's got real heavy planking and massive beams inside of it, probably enough room for about three people down below with all this heavy construction. But it's a very historied boat. Now it's a property of Maine Maritime Academy.
Yep.
And the captain of the schooner, John Worth, is going to be giving a slideshow and talk at the MDI Community Sailing Center, which is on Clark Point Road in Southwest Harbor. There's no charge for this talk, but they do accept donations. If you're interested in going to this, there's a phone number that probably should be good to call for reservations. That number is 244-7905 in Southwest Harbor. And also,
down in Rockland, there's if you're not in Southwest Southwest Harbor neighborhood, you might be closer to Rockland. You can hear another great lecture tomorrow night, and one that ties closely into boat talk. Skip Strong, a Penobscot Bay pilot and the author of In Peril, and one of the best interviews we've ever done on Boat Talk with Skip Strong, telling his story.
Easily 2 years ago now.
Yeah, of rescuing a tug and a barge combination having a mayday situation. They were towing a space shuttle booster in a tropical storm off of Florida, and Skip Strong rescued them with his loaded oil tanker right next to a shoal. And it is one of the best sea stories I have ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other day, the other morning, Sunday morning, really early, I get a call, and it's a fella who I used to work with at a boatyard over here. And a year or two ago, I gave him a copy of that Boat Talk episode with Skip Strong, and I said, you'll love this. Listen to it. Yeah. So anyway, he's been having some hard times lately, and he was up in the middle of the night the other night going through some boxes, and he found that Boat Talk CD. He hadn't listened to it. So he put it on. It just floored him. And he called me up at dawn on Sunday morning going, that was unbelievable. That got me going.
That is a great story.
Yeah, my buddy David, who called me up there, had spent a night off of Scudic Point in February on the upturned hull of his dragger, pretty much expecting not to survive the night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him and his
stern man, like I say, capsized the dragger off of Scudic Point at night in February and spent the night there. Spent 10 hours, I think, on the upturned hull. Did not expect to live, but did. And like I said, that Skip Strong thing just touched him. And we'll try to get that up on the web, too.
Yes. So that talk is happening down in Rockland at the Atlantic Challenge, which is right on the shore there in Rockland. The phone number for that is 594-1800.
Good work.
We were down at the last talk they had, and they had to turn people away because there were so many people that came.
Yeah,
from
we were down there for the, Steve Callahan lecture, and they couldn't fit them all in.
So go early, I would say.
Very popular, and that'll be a good talk, Skip Strong or the Bowdoin one down to the Sailing Center in Southwest Harbor.
Yeah.
We have a phone call, Alan?
Yes, we do. Get right to that. Good morning. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Hi there. This is Rich from Sioux Bend.
Hi, Rich.
And I was reading in the Booth Bay Register a little while ago about a schooner called Hindu.
Not familiar with it.
No? Well, no. It used to be a Provincetown, tour vessel. And I just read that they moved it up to the boatyard where it was built in East Booth Bay, and back in, I forget exactly the history of it, but I was wondering if you guys knew anything about that.
I have not heard of that vessel.
Uh huh.
What's no. the, spell the name?
It was Hindu.
Hindu, like
H-I-N-D-U.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
No, not familiar with that one at all.
Oh, okay. Maybe well, somebody else listening is.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just wanted to mention that.
Okay. And let's see. Let's see if anybody else knows anything about
yeah,
it. That's
yeah.
one of the great things
I'd
about boat talk.
Because I used to live in, you know, on Cape Cod, and I knew people who used to own the Hindu.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. See, we play experts on the radio, but we're not the only ones actually here that know stuff about boats. Uh-huh. So perhaps we'll get a shout back on that.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, see you later.
Okay. Thanks.
Speaking of big boats with agendas, I got a little Raw Faith update as well.
Oh, good.
The self-described galleon built on a mission to take handicapped people and their families sailing down in Addison, Maine. Took them 4 years to build this. Launched for the last couple of years, a vessel of some interesting controversy up and down the coast, presently wintering in Jonesport in Mosebeck Reach. Now, I haven't seen or talked to George personally, but I heard of him, and what I've heard is that George is expecting a crew of people, like eight people, up from Louisiana sometime in May, and their ambition is to take Raw Faith from Jonesport, Maine, and sail it to New Jersey.
You'd think those folks from Louisiana have seen enough water, wouldn't you?
I thought we were sending people to Louisiana, but anyway, the current plan, as I know it, is to import a crew and sail Raw Faith south first thing in the spring, and I believe they are headed for Atlantic City, New Jersey. George has mentioned a connection with Donald Trump's marina several times, and again, won't that be a sight at Donnie's marina in front of the lights of Atlantic City?
Hmm.
Trying to imagine that sight. So Raw Faith potentially leaving port early in the spring, if feasible.
Yeah, we'll have that's, to
what we, that's what we know about that. And if anybody's seen or talked to George this winter, give us a shout-out, too.
Yeah.
Or it's 1-866.
See it headed out. Let us know.
Yeah. 1-866-625-9378 is Boat Talk. What else? The Maine Boat Builder Show is coming up this weekend.
Oh,
starts Friday.
That's a wonderful show down in Portland.
Here's a quote from the ad. It says, a lady from Offshore Magazine says, walking through the door of the Maine Boat Builder Show in Portland was as close as I've come to a religious experience in a long time. Well, she ought to go to church more, but, you know,
yeah.
It is a great show.
Yeah.
And it focuses on the yacht end of boating. And, for instance, the Maine Fisherman's Forum was last weekend. That goes in the fisherman's end of thing. But the Maine Boat Builder Show is a kind of a yachty, very boaty thing, and it attracts people from all over the country. The guy I used to captain for, he would not miss the Maine Boat Builder Show. That was on his calendar every year.
Rightly so. I mean,
yeah.
You want to go to Navajo Blankets, you go to the Southwest. You want to go for good boating, you go to the Maine coast.
Exactly. That is, again, you want to check out the website there, wsportlandcompany.com. And they are trying to think of the name of the business, Finn Sprague's Boatyard down there in the east end of the waterfront up on Commercial Street there. Maine Yacht Service.
Maine Yacht Service.
Maine Yacht Service, I believe it is. Phone's ringing.
Okay, we'll go to that. Good morning. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, this is Pete from Vinyl Haven.
Oh, hi, Pete.
Morning, Pete. How's it over to Vinyl Haven today?
Oh, thick of fog.
Yeah.
Really?
Surprise, surprise. I'm a commercial scuba diver, and I've had a chance to dive on a large sailing vessel that was over at Wayfarer Marine about 3 winters ago, and it broke free and went aground on Medrick Rock, which is on the west side of Vinyl Haven.
What's the name of that vessel?
That's what I'm calling to ask you.
Oh, dear. Because I heard of this, and it's a pretty well-known vessel, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and a pretty fancy one as well.
Right. I seem to recall that it might have done a little troop transport across the channel or something like that back in, you know, World War II or something.
Sailboat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Large, two-mast. But, you know, I was just trying to get some history on it. And I guess you don't know.
I remember that the boat got away, and, you know, a boat loose in the harbor in the middle of the winter is a great little project to watch, see where it'll end up.
Yeah.
And it did fetch up on that rock, as it will find a rock sooner or later. Now, you dove on it, and what were you doing?
Well, she's in pieces, and there's some lead ballast plates that I've harvested, and they say Ludix and Hoot H-U-T-T-E. It's, and there's like a foundry symbol in between the two names. And does that ring a bell?
I seem to remember that it was a European vessel, and I'm sure somebody is out there that knows the name of the boat we're talking about and even the history of it.
Well, I'm sure Wayfarers does, and I don't know if they want to talk about it too much.
You're not supposed to let your boats get away from you, and that's a bad call to the owner. Your boat had a nice little trip the other day, but it didn't end well. Please give us a call if you get this message.
Yeah, well, if somebody else out there, you know, would like to share the name of the vessel and, you know, a date and origination, I'll be listening.
What else besides picking up lead plates does a commercial scuba diver do, Pete?
Oh, urchins and scallops.
How's the urchins and scallops this year?
Well, last year was the worst year ever, and this year is beating it.
All right, then. Things are looking up. The urchin population, have you been doing this for a while?
I think I'm going on about 11 years now.
And what's been your impression over that 11 years of the change?
Mismanagement right from the start. And we could have had a sustainable fishery. I think with the fact that so many people have dropped out of the industry, is it's going to be its only saving grace.
Was a bit of a gold rush when it started.
Right.
Everybody jumped into that, and you could have no skills whatsoever, go buy a diving outfit, not even be certified, and make $1,000 or more a day.
Yeah. You see some pretty shaky rigs out there in the beginning.
Oh, and just like you say, little aluminum Sears, rowboats with plywood houses.
Oh, lots of plywood
made on
houses.
Them, and you know, a little four-horse outboard and three guys jumping overboard trying to make, like I said, $1,000 a day. Why not?
Well, what that all boils down to is this was the first fishery that people who are not traditional fishermen were able to get into.
Right.
And there was no sense of, as the University of Maine scientist put it, no sense of stewardship.
Mm. Maybe the eels were like that as well, the glass eel fishery that was quite a gold rush a few years back now, too.
Yeah. Well,
anybody could be an eel fisherman. You had to have a pair of boots and a net. You know?
Yep. All
interesting.
Right. Wow.
Well, Pete, we'll see.
I read all of Kenneth Roberts' books. And just engrossed, loved them. And to hear your trip of the bateaus brought back a lot of memories.
Cool. Glad you liked it. I, like I say, grew up on that stuff. And I actually tried to write a Kenneth Roberts sort of a great American novel as a high school kid. I wanted to write about George Weymouth coming to Maine in 1640-something, kidnapping a bunch of Indians, or no, it was before 1640, kidnapping some Indians, taking them back to Europe, and some of those Indians ended up back here. One of them ended up to be greeting the colonists when they come to Plymouth in 1620, you know.
Speaking of the Queen's
unlikely
English.
Enough, Squanto, as he was called. And so I never did get grew up to become Kenneth Roberts, but that was my ambition as a boy, Pete.
Hmm. What was the name of the book that has just come out that you mentioned?
It's called Through a Howling Wilderness, Thomas Desjardins.
Okay.
And just a tremendous, not a big read, but boy, stuffed with details. And I don't want to give it back to the library is my problem. It's overdue. I got to give it back today on my way home, and I want to keep it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Pete. And we have another caller, so let's go right to that. Good morning. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Mike.
Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning.
Hey, Mike, guys. This is Sam Teal.
Hi, Professor Sam. Captain Sam Teal from down to Maine Maritime
Welcome
Academy.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Sam, what's your position down there exactly?
Department chair of the what's called the Marine Transportation Department. That's the short version of that is the deckies. That was we're training all the mates.
Very hands-on kind of a little operation.
I like that.
Oh, that was a pun too,
yeah,
wasn't it?
That was a good one, Mike.
Yeah, totally unconscious. Trust me on that.
We like to use the experiential word.
Yeah.
Experiential education.
Yeah.
There you go. Excellent.
Yeah.
The reason I called you up, Sam, is that there's this whole port controversy going on now, and people are very surprised to know that we don't even operate our own ports. And, of course, we have an American Merchant Marine. We have a couple of marine academies, Maine Maritime being one of the most prominent ones. What is the nature of the American Merchant Marine? Is sort of my question. I know that's an awful broad question, but who are you? When you're training people down at Maine Maritime, what kind of jobs are you training them for? We envision, of course, foreign going large ships carrying lots of big stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you know, certainly, and I'm a graduate Maine Maritime back in the mid '70s, and you know, we're coming out of Vietnam. There was a certain buildup at that point. You know, at that time, you were seeing graduates come out of all the maritime schools, and they were going off into the U.S. Merchant Marine, that very traditional tankers. At that point, there was still a lot of the old-style freighters as opposed to the container ships.
Bulk cargo ships.
Yeah. And you know, I sailed on a number of those and myself. But, you know, certainly through the years, the size of the U.S. Merchant Marine, the deep-sea, blue-water, traditional tankers, freighters, container ships, and then you get into, you know, what's called row-row, the roll-on, roll-off. Those have all, you know, they've been flagged out to what are called flag of convenience states or, you know, countries.
Pure economics.
It really is. Now, yesterday when I was talking to you, Mike, I said I wasn't sure if I could come up with a number of how many U.S. flag ships there were, but I did a little Google search here. I'm looking at it now.
Oh, thank you.
And let me see. In fact, I got a list of every country that has U.S. flag or has ships, and you know, we can look at any one. We could
Well, back in the old days,
let's take one that seems to be pretty popular is Liberia.
Let me get United States first. We have 486 ships registered in the United States. Those are over 1,000 gross tons, which, in other words, a pretty big ship.
Yep.
486. If you go to Liberia, by comparison, let's see, 1,465 ships in Liberia. And you're right, that's a very common flag of convenience.
Yeah, very helpful laws or lack thereof in Liberia,
Thanks,
probably.
Yeah.
Yep. In the old days, of course, if you'd go up and down the coast of Maine, you would find numerous large sailing vessels, bark ships, brigantines, that kind of thing, being built on the bank in the side of every harbor up and down
you
the coast here.
You guys love to talk about those ships.
The old wooden ships. Oh, there's the
oh God, wooden ships.
Yeah. They made them right.
They would lay a keel outside and just build the thing, day in and day out outside, and then they'd launch it. They'd fill it with stuff and sail it to foreign ports.
Yeah, but how big were those? They were little. You know, they're little things. The world changed. You know, they were 100 feet long.
We built some bigger ships here. But anyway, so those days have definitely passed. Those days definitely passed. Are some of the ships on our list, are they, in fact, part of the military command? They have a lot of boats that are mothballed.
Well, you know, what we have here in the United States, because of the downsizing of the U.S. flag, you know, there's concern for national security that you know, you need a merchant marine to support the United States in time of national emergency. So what we've seen is a growth in what's called military sealift command. And those are tankers and cargo ships, which are very often, they're gray hull. You know, to the casual observer, you think, oh, that must be a Navy ship. But it's not. It's manned by civilians through a different you know, the same people who had graduated from Maine Maritime, not going into the Navy, but just working, you know, as an employee for what's called, we call it MSC.
Yeah, my uncle's a first engineer, works on some of those.
There you go.
Yeah.
And some of those ships are actually owned by a military sealift command, in other words, owned by the United States and the government, the federal government. And some are, you might have a company which leases their ships to military sealift command. Makes up some of those 486 ships.
Yeah, if we don't actually own the ship that brings our Dexter shoes and our Levi's back from overseas, that's one thing. But
we don't, right?
But we kind of need to own some of the ships that haul oil and tanks and you know, that kind of stuff. Now, don't we? That's bottom line, right there.
Well, yeah, you got to have those things.
Yeah. Now, In terms of deep seagoing berths that you can train people for at Maine Maritime, I know friends that work on tankers that go from Alaska to Korea, for instance.
Yep. Yep.
So these berths still do exist, but in essence, a lot of them, the stuff you read in Professional Mariner magazine, for instance, it's coastal work. The American Merchant Marine is largely a coastal thing, isn't it?
It is, you know, and down here in Castine, I think certainly over the last 15 years or so, we've changed our emphasis. We have one program that trains and educates, you know, the type of student who is that traditional merchant marine cadet. We have another program called the Small Vessel Operations Program, which is really geared towards smaller licenses. In other words, the tugboat, workboat industry. And the last number I heard was, I think there's 50,000 workboats in the United States.
Wow, and good jobs, too, basically.
Oh, you know, yeah, you know, we're talking, well, I often have students who graduate and they go out the first year and they're earning more money than I do.
I run into a young kid, I believe he's first year down at the academy right now, Josh Dime, and he was playing lead guitar, opening a concert at the Grand in Ellsworth, and mm-hmm. chatting him up, say, what do you think about being a musician? He says, I've been told not to, want to hope to be a musician. He says, I'm going to be a tugboat skipper and a musician in my spare time. I went, good plan, kid.
Oh, you know, it's a great, you know, if you want that kind of lifestyle, I mean, it's just, you know, 3 weeks on, maybe 3 weeks off, you can go off and be what you ever, whatever you want to do for those 3 weeks, and then you go out and you can make, you know, you make your money.
Yeah.
We have a big, we've gone off to something you guys would, you know, dear to your hearts, what we call the Auxiliary Sail Training Program, and Captain Andy Chase heads that up. But, you know, with the schooner Bowden down here, we've got a number of professors who are sail masters, the skipper from the Pride of Baltimore, now works here, and John Worth, who is also was one of the owners of the Belfast Tugs, now works here, and he's a schooner captain as well.
John is giving, we just mentioned, a talk at the MDI Sailing Center tomorrow night about the schooner Bowden.
It's, you know, and we have a lot of kids who come in here who really are fired up about traditional sail, and there's a lot of boats out there that they can work on, but then, we encourage them to get their 500-ton tugboat style license so that they can afford to to work on a schooner, because that's not necessarily the same kind of pay scale, but if you can do both and it's, you know, it can be seasonal work and it makes for a nice life for them. It's very popular.
I was visiting relatives who operate Lock and Dam number 12 on the Mississippi River one afternoon when a barge full of wheat come through.
Yeah.
And I chatted up the deck guy who stands there. Mind you, the captain of the barge is, I don't know, a couple thousand feet behind him. The thing is like less than a foot narrower than the lock that it's in. And this guy's up on the bow going 6 inches, 6.5, 5 inches,
oh, yeah.
telling him how far he is from the wall, you know. And I chatted him up. I said, how do you like your job? Nothing else on the planet he'd rather be doing than going up and down that river. Best job on the planet.
Yeah.
He said, I always remembered that.
Well,
how proud he was of that.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are going, and women, you know, we've got a lot more women going to school here too, and you know they're just going all over the place. There are jobs, I guess. If you know, I'd want to say that there are jobs in the merchant marine.
So Sam, back to the blue water boats, the foreign flagged ones, the company or the country who owns those boats gets to pick the officers and crew. Is that correct?
Well, oh yeah, oh certainly, and you know what you see is. Multinational crews. You might have Greek officers. The captain might be Norwegian. The deck crew. What you might define as the enlisted, although it's not really Navy in that sense. But the deck crew, the able-bodied seamen and stuff. You know, they might be Filipino. So you have, which creates all sorts of new issues on board. Multinational stuff.
It's bad enough having a job that's sort of like being a truck driver. You're away on a regular basis, and it can be hard on people, let alone you throw that confusion in, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we first got on the air, you defined Maine Maritime, and I think we're one of, there's Maine Maritime, Massachusetts Maritime, New York Maritime, California, Texas, and Great Lakes has a small maritime academy as well. Then there's the Federal Maritime College down in Kings Point. So, if you look at each one of those and say on an average, each one is graduating maybe, we'll just talk about deck officers, maybe 40 deck officers a year, let's say times six or seven, you know. You can come up with a number of people who are going into this industry every year, and there's room for them.
And some also some Maine Maritime graduates don't go to sea. They work in industrial plants, basically, with generators and stuff like that.
Well, you probably see more of that on the engineering side. Yep. Although they have a third engineer's license, they might choose to, you know, they might end up at a power plant, stationary engineering type application.
I sometimes think that I should have studied geology instead of biology at college because everybody in the geology program was employed with a good job right out of college, and I sometimes think I ought to have gone to Maine Maritime like my uncle. So, yeah.
You know, one of the other things that's been big for us is the offshore drilling industry, and we have a lot of students who go out and they become, because a lot of these deep water drilling rigs are, you know, they're floating units. They have the same type of criteria that a ship would have.
Right.
So we offer, you know, courses in offshore drilling operations, and they go out and they, again, you know, nice paying jobs, nice lifestyle, and there's a fellow who lives down in Verona Island who has been doing that for years.
Huh. Just lost it here too. I had one more question for you, and I'm sorry, Alan. Say something.
Well, I have a friend who just came back from going way down in the Southern Caribbean, and he was close enough to Venezuela to say that he's seen all kinds of slicks and what he calls oil pollution from the offshore oil fields in Venezuela. And you're talking about having students who go into that area. It must be ecology. It would be a real strong suit that would be taught here in the Americas as opposed to some of these foreign workers. And how much influence can we have on another country like Venezuela to treat the ocean right?
Well, you know, now you're into, you know, international conventions of anti-pollution conventions and regulations and... That's a hard question.
Well, I'm thinking sort of on the grassroots level when you have some guy who is aware of the problems that are causing is working alongside a bunch of people, say, in Venezuela who really aren't aware of what they're doing as far as, so, you know, sort of a more like a worker-to-worker.
Yeah, there's sort of an ethical, moral side of that. I know what you mean. I think, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough question. You have to
work it out in the world comes with an interesting set of challenges, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to educate them, you know, from the ground up, and we try to do that.
Got an easier question for you on the way out here. You go into the Bangor Savings Bank at all in Castine?
Yes.
Two of my favorite boats, I keep forgetting to mention this, but since we're talking down to Castine, are in the Bangor Savings Bank. Just before you come into Castine there, John Gardner.
Oh, isn't John's work just incredible?
Yeah, John Gardner, Castine resident, has built, he's a modeler, among other things, and he built a model of the Hesper and Luther Little. Yep. Which were the two schooners on the side of the road in Route 1 in Wiscasset there for years.
Oh, yes.
Okay? And he has built them in their decrepit state. That's the essence of the model, that these boats are there going to hell.
Mud.
Yeah, going to hell.
Yeah, almost you think about a diorama type imagery.
Stunning piece of work. I'd recommend anybody go down to Castine, stop into the Bangor Savings Bank.
John did a model of the schooner Bowden iced in up north back when McMillan was sailing it, and it's down here in our welcome center down in the village of Castine. And it's not only do you see the boat iced in with the igloo, you know, over the hatch, but you also see underwater and, you know, the anchor chain coming down, and it's really fantastic. He does more than just models.
I have to look at that next time. Well, with the Hesper and the Luther Little. See, those things were in the mud at the just by the Route 1 bridge there, and they suffered just the neglect of being in the mud, but then they suffered vandalism. People set them on fire and stuff.
Yep.
So John wanted to represent this in his model, so he built these things painstakingly, okay? And he sat around and thought about it, and then he took it in his hand and from waist high dropped them on the floor. to stow them in, you know. And then he set them on fire, having, I mean, a meticulous little, and to get the flame effect, the burnt. And that to John, talking to him, was just an incredible artistic breakthrough moment to take this thing you built so carefully and drop it, you know. But it's a stunning piece of work, and while we were talking to you down in Castine, I had to throw that in.
Yeah, well, John's a piece of work.
John is a piece of work as well. We'd like to get him on Boat Talk sometime.
Why don't you?
You never know how John's going to answer the phone. That's
yeah.
He's one of these fellows who'll say anything when he picks up the phone.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Sam, well, thank you for giving us a call this morning and chatting up the American Merchant Marine.
Well, I want one quick follow-up question. We were talking about countries being captained or officered by foreign companies. So it's possible, even if a port is managed by an American company, it's still possible for an entirely foreign crew to come in on a foreign vessel into a port. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's been the way it's been from the beginning of, time.
Mm-hmm. I remembered the question I forgot to ask you. Liquefied natural gas tankers are becoming an issue up and down the coast here, and there are more of them under construction all the time. That's a growing industry.
Yeah.
Apparently, it takes special qualifications to be an LNG officer.
That's right.
Does Maine Maritime, or are they in that field at all?
We're not now. We certainly look at it. I was over in London last fall, meeting with the International Maritime Organization on that very topic, and we're looking at it. You know, at this point, there are no U.S. United States flagged LNG ships.
Right.
So it wouldn't be cost effective for us at this point to be turning out, you know, a dozen or two dozen LNG trained officers where there's no ship now, so we're kind of ramping this up, watching very carefully what's happening here in the U.S.
Because they would have to, trained officers would have to compete against Lascars and Indians and all the Filipinos, you know, all the other people that staff those boats.
And foreign flagships don't often hire U.S. flag officers.
Right.
You know why?
Fussy, spoiled bunch?
Well, there's going to be all kinds of reasons, but the pay scales is less.
Yeah.
The time on board, you know, a foreign flag captain might spend 9-10 months going to sea, have a few months off, and earn half as much. In other words, $50,000 or $40,000, as opposed to maybe a U.S. flag master mariner earning $100,000.
There you go. That gets people's attention.
Well, you know, and I hate to say it, but you know, $100,000 doesn't. Goes a long way, but it doesn't go that far.
Right.
You guys know that.
I'd like to know that.
What's on the other end of that?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Sam. You've been very helpful today, and we'll be talking to you again, I'm sure.
Sure. Well, thanks, guys.
See you.
Thank you. Sam, Professor Captain Sam Teal from down to Maine Maritime Academy.
Yeah. And it's about time for us to furl our sails and make room for Jim Pahoosh.
Run it right out, haven't we? Yeah, well, Boat Talk is, like I say, happens on the second Tuesday every month, and whatever happens, happens, and, you know, hopefully we had a good time this morning.
Yep, and thanks to Amy Brown down in the engine room. Until next week, or next month, we'll talk to you later.
Go out on the ocean, I set me up on my pony, on my boat. If I were Roy Rogers, I'd sure enough be single. I couldn't bring myself to marry an old dame. It'd just be me and Trigger. We'd go riding through them woods. Then we'd buy a boat and on the sea we'd sail. And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. Go out on the ocean, I said, get up on